we have an informational meeting today. It's an overview of the Annie E. Casey Foundation. We have both Gary Weeks and folks from the state office here representing the grant program that we have going in the state of Oregon at this time. And Gary Weeks is, of course, not only the former director of human resources, but he's also worked for the Annie E. Casey Foundation for the last couple of years before coming back to Oregon. So we're anxious to do that. I also have on the phone here, and who will be listening in, it's Jerry Weybrandt. He's the interim program manager at Roseburg, the SDA number 6. So I guess Gary Weeks is first in order.
Mr. Chairman, it's okay. Could three of us come up? And
certainly. Any way you wish to do it here. We will just do it to allow you the most latitude here. And if you want to mix and match, that's fine.
Okay.
Whatever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Gary Weeks, the director of the Department of Administrative Services. And I think you all know on my left is Ramona Foley, who's, when I was here last, was the Director of Services for Children and Family and now has a new job title and since the reorg that I'm not familiar with.
I'm Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services in an area called Children, Adults, and Families.
And Tony Peterson on my right, who is a longtime Administrator in Services for Children and Family, I assume is still Ramona's deputy.
She is again Ramona's deputy.
Okay. Now that we know what we're all doing, I thought, Mr. Chairman, that maybe I would just lead off and talk a little bit about the Casey Foundation in general, and then maybe more specifically about some of the work that I did over the 2 years that I went back to the Casey Foundation, and the kind of work that we did, and then Ramona and Tony can talk a little bit about how the Casey work is actually playing out, the Casey support, I should say, is playing out here in Oregon. And we've got another special guest with us, too, Dr. Daniel Webster, who's seated behind me, who will want to make some comments to you. Dr. Webster is with the University of California at Berkeley, although he's an Oregonian, lives in southern Oregon. Works through UC Berkeley and is a researcher and associate of the Casey Foundation, and has got some very interesting, I think, work to share with you that he's done around kids. So maybe I'll just lead out here and talk a little bit about the foundation. I'm going to start and just assume that some of you may not have a good background of the foundation itself. The Casey Foundation was developed by Jim Casey. And Jim Casey, his father died when he was very young. He started a bicycle messenger service, which grew to become UPS. And so it's one of the great success stories of this country, probably. And he started his work in Seattle, Washington, as a boy on this bicycle messenger service, and then began transporting packages by car and then eventually by air, and United Parcel Service was born. And his mother, Annie E. Casey, was someone who was very involved in her community, very interested in kids and families and so on. And so in her name, he created Casey programs. And there are a variety of Casey programs, which gets confusing to people even inside the Casey Foundation. The group that I went back to Baltimore to work with for 2 years is the Annie E. Casey Foundation. There is also, out here based in Seattle, Casey Family Programs, which has a separate board in the Northwest. And Casey Family Programs is a foster care program so that they take in and support foster children. And they take kids that otherwise would be in our system. And they provide them with a very rich experience, more than we're able to do even in our own foster care system. And Ramona can add to that. Then in the Northeast, there is something called Casey Family Services, which is an East Coast version of the foster care program that operates out here. What I think of as the mothership is Annie Casey Foundation in Baltimore. It's one of the 10 largest foundations in America, certainly the largest children foundation. Even with the stock market crash, the resources, the assets, I should say, of the foundation are near $3 billion. So it's a very well-endowed foundation that has existed for many, many years. And as I mentioned, they do work in child foster care systems. They do work in children's health arenas. They do juvenile justice work. They support juvenile justice projects. The Casey family has even endowed up on the hill at OHSU. Some of you may have heard of the Casey Eye Institute. That's a brother of James Casey who actually sponsored the Casey Eye Institute. So the Casey work is pretty widespread, but generally all focuses around children and the support of families and children and families in communities. I mean, you hear them talk all the time about the importance of children and families in communities, and that strong families are born of strong communities that support parents and kids alike. And so the foundation, in addition to supporting kids, individual kids and families, they have a very strong commitment to communities throughout the country, to trying to make viable, livable communities that are economically sound and sound in other ways too. So that's, you know, a brief thumbnail of what they do at the Casey Foundation. When I went back there to work for the foundation to start a consulting group that was called the Casey Strategic Consulting Group. The purpose of that consulting group was to provide resources to states that were experiencing problems in their juvenile correction system and in their child welfare system particularly. And so over 2 years, my job was to build a consulting group, which we did. When I left, we had 15 full-time consultants, and we had engagements in Maine, Arkansas, Georgia, the city of Philadelphia, and the state of Louisiana. Louisiana was a juvenile justice project where we were trying to work with the state to reduce the number of kids that were incarcerated and to particularly look at the over-incarceration of certain racial populations, African American youth in particular, in Louisiana. In Georgia, we were trying to build an integrated service system, similar to what I've talked to some of you about over the years here in Oregon, where you would bring all the parts of human services together in a much more integrated and coordinated way. Philadelphia was similar. The mayor of Philadelphia wanted an integrated database so that all data related to human services was integrated with all case management records. And so we were trying to help the city of Philadelphia build that. Maine, the engagement in Maine was around child welfare. They had a very tragic death in Maine in January of 2000 that made national news. In fact, it was the subject of a Frontline production that aired about 4 weeks ago, a two-night Frontline production on the Maine child welfare system. And we were called in just after I got there to come into Maine and help look at their child welfare system from top to bottom. This was the case that caused us to go in was a young girl who was in the care of a foster parent, and the foster parent duct taped this child to a chair in a basement, and the child suffocated. And what made it even more horrible was that foster mother was a former child welfare caseworker, long-time child welfare caseworker. And that caused the director and the governor to say, we'd like to have somebody come in and look from top to bottom. And so in doing that, let me just tell you a little bit about the way we approach those kinds of projects, because I think it will fit in with the work that Ramona and Tony and Dr. Webster want to talk with you about. But we were very interested through the consulting group in trying to create evidence-based practices in states so that the data about kids and families would be used to drive decisions that agencies made. And you wouldn't make decisions without really knowing much about your client population. And so when we went into a state like Maine, we started by saying we need access to all the records around child welfare, Medicaid records, placement records, outcome records, any kind of records that you had, that the state of Maine had, I should say, on child welfare, we wanted to look at. And we contracted with the Chapin Hall Institute for Children, which is a part of the University of Chicago, and they do a lot of data analysis for organizations. So we had a large contract with them to do the data analysis for us. And so we provided them with data tapes for 4 years on Maine's kids. Now, all sorts of information. What they do is they synthesize it, and it takes them usually a couple of months to do it, and then they give you back information about your client population. And I left you, I'm not going to go through this, but I thought you might be interested in, this is a draft of some of the work that we did in Maine. It's called Using Evidence to Guide Reform in Child Welfare. And what it shows you is how, you know, what we found when we looked at the data in Maine about kids, and what the data, we think, told us about what happens to kids by age group, by the placement type, by how close they're placed near their families and their relatives, by how many times they move while they're in care, what happens to them by length of stay. And all of that, when you start to look at it, begins to give you a picture of where you're spending your money on children, supporting children that are in the care of the state, have to be removed from their parents. And then the outcomes that those children are achieving, or the outcomes that are resulting based on all kinds of circumstances. And you can begin to then target your resources in a way to get you more outcomes, the outcomes closer to what you really want to see. And there's a lot of data in here, and I hope that I know you're all busy, but at some point I hope you get a chance to look at the data, because it's pretty revealing what we were able to discover about kids in Maine. I mean, we started with some hypotheses when we went in there, and our hypotheses were that children that are placed away from home don't have as good an opportunity to be reunited with their family. They stay in care longer. We had a hypothesis that there were longer lengths of stay for older children. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a cursory look at the information before we ever turned it over to Chapin Hall told us that kids from 6 to 12 seem to be in care a lot longer than younger kids. We had a hypothesis that there was overuse of high-end care, what they call in Maine therapeutic care, and that there were far more children in therapeutic care, we thought, than actually needed to be in therapeutic care. And that's in Maine, that's the most expensive kind of care you can get. It's what we used to call special needs kids in Oregon. I don't know if there's a new title for it or a new name for it or not. And we had a couple other hypotheses. One is that, you know, placement with relatives produces better outcomes for kids than other kinds of placements, and that high rates of placements, you know, if you turn kids over and over and over again, they have a very difficult time ever getting out of your care. They just kind of continue to cycle through. And so those were some of the hypotheses we had.
Senator Brown.
Mr. Perry, I can't remember when AFSCA was passed.
1997.
Okay. So the study was conducted right after that happening.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Correct.
Thanks.
And so we went in with those kinds of hypotheses based on just sort of a cursory look at what was going on. And then we ran all the data with the help of Chapin Hall, and we looked at the data. And we looked at it not just by the things I mentioned to you, the placement type and how near the child was to family and so on, but we also looked at what was happening. They have 8 districts there. They operate their child welfare program through 8 districts. And so we compared the districts to see, you know, which districts are doing best in terms of reuniting kids, which districts are doing best in terms of keeping children out of high-end care when they don't need to be there. And what that helps you do is to go back to those districts that are performing, you know, in the way that you'd like them to perform, and find out what are they doing with their staff. You know, how are they training their staff? How are they reinforcing people and providing the right incentives and so on with their staff? And you learn from that. So all of this in Maine was an effort for us to redesign the whole child welfare system there, which we began after we had the data and we knew where we had to focus on, and they had an agreement with us about the places they wanted to work. Then we brought in technical experts and began to retrain and redesign their system. And a lot of this we of course looked through the legislature. The Maine legislature was very interested in this. They had their human services committee. Our staff met with them fairly regularly, and I met with the chair of the committee several times to, you know, advise them and inform them of how we were going. And I think, you know, happily there are a lot of good things going on in Maine right now, and we think that the state has done a lot to, and it's not just about money. It's not about putting money into the system, because they're suffering the same problem we are in Maine. They had a couple of special sessions when I was up there. Their budget was really doing poorly. So this wasn't about saying we just need to put more money in the system and everything will be well. You know, it was about how do you actually change the system in a way to get better outcomes within the resource pool that you have. And so we think, and it's similar kind of work we did in other states, but Maine was the furthest one along. That's why I brought you this data here. And again, I'm happy to go over it with you at some time. But it just reflects the value, I think, of having evidence-based, you know, practice in what you can do with it. And I know Ramona and Tony believe in that. And we've had, I think the state's been fortunate to have the good service of Dr. Webster, who can tell you more about his work in trying to bring Oregon to a stage where we can use more, become more evidence focused and stuff in the way that we respond to the needs of kids and families. So maybe I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and see if we can blend this in with Ramona's comments about where we are. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you.
Senator Fisher and members of the committee, I'm Ramona Foley. I'm an assistant director at the Department of Human Services and over an area called Children, Adults, and Families, and interim assistant director over Community Human Services, which is the field structure. How we got involved with the family-to-family as an effort here in Oregon, some of you recall I actually came to Oregon in August of 99. That's when I came to work with Gary Weeks, and I was the administrator for services to children and families. And after I arrived, we did have a phone call from Annie E. Casey, from a fellow named John Mattingly, who wanted to know if there was some interest on our part. They knew Gary at a national level. You at that time were chair of the CEOs from around the country, so they knew Gary. They also knew me, and I knew of the work that the Casey Foundation was doing in child welfare. We saw this as an opportunity to at least have a conversation, and so they came out in the fall of 99 to meet with us. And they were attracted to a couple of things about Oregon. One was that Oregon had a national reputation as a leader in child welfare practice and an innovative practice at that. Some of the things we do in Oregon that we sort of take for granted still aren't done in other states. Our use of mediation as an example, using mediation rather than using attorneys to battle for termination of parental rights, that's a unique approach still. Open adoption is a unique approach still across this country. But Oregon had that kind of reputation, family decisions, meetings, for example. A lot of things that you all take credit for, because some of those are in the statute, and many of those things in practice are things that you all gave permission to the department to be innovative and creative on. A second thing was that we were interested, we told them, in not just a project, we wanted to do something that would have some statewide implications. If we saw good practice, we didn't want to limit it just to a project. And we kind of challenged them, because the family-to-family had only been done in large metropolitan areas, places like Cincinnati, Ohio, very large areas. And we said, well, if you can make it work there, you should be able to make it work anywhere. And we'd like to see how we would come out using this, not just in Portland, in our urban areas, but also in rural Oregon. And so we were the first state to say we wanted to try something like this as an approach in those counties that might have fewer resources than a large metropolitan area. The third thing was attractive about us was that we do have a data system that's pretty extensive. We don't always get out of it exactly what we want, but it has a lot of data in the system itself. So we knew if we were data rich, if we had the kind of technical assistance that Gary's talking about, we might actually be able to look at our system and tell a lot more about the evidence within our system through the use of that data. Now, what was appealing to us about the Casey Foundation, I think you have before you an article that looks like this, Family to Family. And on the last page of that article, you see sort of the tenets or the philosophical underpinning of the Casey Family to Family Project. And these things were very consistent with what we felt that the state and the feedback we were getting from our stakeholders that our state was interested in looking at. The first was a reduction in the number of children who have to go into institutions or into some kind of congregate care. because children might could be served closer to home in their own homes or in foster family care if at all possible. That doesn't mean that we would never have congregate care. There are always going to be special needs children who require that. But we didn't want to be a state that was building more institutions for our children. And the second is a shift of those resources. If you start looking at where the money is spent, as Gary says, if you start looking at what your data is and where the high end of the system is, it's an opportunity to say, well, we could spend these resources in a different way if we invested closer to families at the front door rather than waiting till children become high-end users of foster care services. The decrease in the length of stay in out-of-home placement. Across the nation, we've been concerned about how long children stay in the foster care system before they either go home safely or before they find permanency through adoption. The increase in the number of planned reunifications, that's how many children are we able to successfully get back to their families if they do have to come into the foster care system. Decrease in the number of unplanned reentries. We don't want to have children go home and then have to re-enter the foster care system a second and a third time. And this has been problematic in the child welfare system in this country. So we wanted to help in looking at that. The decrease in the number of placement disruptions. You often will hear stories in foster care about children who have had 13, sometimes 30 placements. And while that's just a few children, those placements are so traumatic. Pretty soon what you find is the child may lose the ability to even bond in a placement because they are really on a fast track of going after one placement after another. And then finally, the reduction in the number of children served away from their own families. When I arrived in 1999, we had had about a 50% increase in our paid foster care placements in our state over the past 5 years. This was very alarming to us, and we wanted to find ways and strategies to start saying we can reduce the number of children who require out-of-home care. We can do something different. As families become known to us, there are different approaches we can use. So those were kind of the tenets that sort of resonated with us. So we began this conversation with the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and in June of 2000, we sent them a proposal, which they accepted, and it gave us a 3-year, $1 million grant to provide us with technical consultation, with national experts coming in and helping us look at our child welfare system and how we can make the kind of improvements that would lead to these better outcomes. We started with 3 sites here in Oregon. We started with Klamath County, Jackson County, and East Multnomah County. And East Multnomah was an easy pick because they insisted on using our largest metropolitan area. But with Klamath and Jackson, we had 2 counties that voiced some concern about their placement rates, especially Klamath at that time, how many children were coming into care. They wanted help on how to stem that. And Jackson, of course, was our service integration county. We already knew that there was some good work being done there across systems, and we wanted to take advantage of that. So in the fall of 2002, we began statewide implementation planning because there are practices that we have learned over the last 2 years that we can go beyond these particular pilot sites and start doing things statewide as different practice. And Tony Peterson will talk about that in just a few minutes. But I think one of the things that's an accolade for us is that the Annie E. Casey Foundation is planning to hold their National Family to Family Conference in Portland, Oregon in June. They want to highlight the work that's been going on here in Oregon, and they will bring their other sites from around the country to host this event in Portland. So that's very good news for us, we believe. And Tony is going to talk specifically about some of the achievements we've had here in Oregon.
Thank you, Senator Fisher, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tony Peterson, Deputy Assistant Director for Children, Adults, and Families. And as Ramona said, we started with the Casey Foundation on 2 levels. Local laboratories in those 3 counties, and then we added a 4th county, Marion, after about 6 months. And then secondly, looking at statewide strategies that we could implement based on our experience in these local sites. Casey has 4 primary strategies that they like us to focus on. And those strategies encompass the outcomes that Ramona just outlined. And those strategies focus on how we work with families when we first have contact with them, and we are at risk of taking children into protective custody. How can we work with those families to provide the supports, the community assistance that they may need to help us safely keep children at home? And one of the strategies is using a team decision meeting. The second strategy is, when children come into care, how can we make sure that we provide the very best care possible while they're out of home? And that involves a very extensive recruitment and training process for foster parents. How do we have a very enriched training program, enriched supports for foster parents? And how do we recruit those foster homes in the neighborhoods where the children come into care? Because an additional goal is, how can we keep children community-based and allow regular contact with their birth parents, with their other community supports, to stay in the same school they're in, maintain contact with the same group of friends, sometimes extended family in that neighborhood. So that set of strategies involving a very enriched support to foster parents is the second strategy. The third one is building community partnerships. Because as Gary Weeks mentioned earlier, the community supports the family. And the community can support not only foster parents, but birth parents, and can help us provide safe environments for children and supportive environments for children. And then the final strategy is evaluating the results, using our data system to be able to track children as they come into care and to be able to measure the outcomes we are able to obtain with those children based on our employment of those strategies. So we can look at children who came into care prior to the start of our partnership with Casey and see the outcomes they had and how long it took to get those outcomes. And then we can follow cohorts of children who come into care in various months after our implementation and see what kind of better outcomes we're getting and if we're getting them more quickly. We've been able to get some excellent results in our local laboratories. In Klamath County, for example, we had a very high placement rate. It was almost like children came into care without a great deal of community involvement. And with the implementation of the Casey strategies, with the team decision meetings right at the front door, with the expansion of community involvement and community recruitment and retention of foster parents, we have been able to, number one, take fewer children into care and maintain those children safely in their neighborhoods. And when we do take children into care, we are placing more of those children in their local neighborhoods and surrounding them with community-based supports. The court is very pleased with our work there, as are community partners. And we think these are better outcomes for children. We're experiencing similar outcomes in Jackson County and in Marion County. And in Multnomah County, we're just in the process of expanding our project there throughout the whole county. And that will be intensive work that we'll undertake in the next 2 to 3 months. So, if you have any questions, I can answer.
Maybe we should move to Dr. Webster.
Yes, let's do that, and then, because I have several questions, but yes, some of them are being answered.
Chairman Fisher, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Daniel Webster. I'm Senior Research Specialist and Project Director at the Center for Social Services Research at UC Berkeley, and I also act as a technical assistant for the Annie E. Casey Foundation surrounding self-evaluation issues, self-evaluation being one of the four core strategies of family-to-family that Tony was just sharing with us. And in the time that I'm allotted today, I'd like to talk briefly about three subject areas. I'll talk first about national trends in evaluation of outcomes in child welfare, sort of along the lines of what Gary was speaking about before. And then from there I'll move, and within that I'll talk about family-to-family initiative and specifically the component of family-to-family self-evaluation and how it fits in that context of these national evaluation of outcomes in child welfare. And then I'll move on to what we've accomplished thus far in Oregon in the 2 years that family-to-family has been here. And then I'll close with some thoughts on where the initiative seems to be going and some next steps. So to begin with national trends in child welfare evaluation of outcomes, it's somewhat ironic that the recent media attention on some of the tragedies that have occurred in Florida and other places, some of which Gary was mentioning before, comes at a time that coincides with some serious and important, I believe, steps that are being taken by the federal government to promote accountability by states in terms of their child welfare practice through the Children and Family Services review process. This review process asks states to achieve certain outcomes. And this is a good idea. And it's not without its shortcomings, and it can certainly be improved. But it's much needed, and I think that ultimately it has the potential to lead to a basis for some real positive change. Now, what has emerged from the, as the first states have undergone this review process, is a growing recognition nationwide that the handful of federal outcome measures have some significant limitations, and that in order to really get a clear picture of child welfare agency performance, what is would be really necessary is the use of longitudinal data to track child welfare outcomes along the lines of what is built into the self-evaluation component of the family-to-family initiative. Those outcomes I'm talking about, these longitudinal outcomes, are those that Ramona spoke about a moment ago. So what is self-evaluation? Well, first of all, I'll say what it is not. Self-evaluation is not the conventional, traditional process wherein an outside expert is hired to come in, observe agency practice, measure performance, leave, examine the data in private, and then reappear at some later date with some recommendations on problems that need to be fixed in the agency. What self-evaluation is an internal process whereby your agency staff take available data that is routinely collected already and use that information to measure these specific outcomes and to drive their decision making. By looking at those specific outcomes, the ones that Ramona was mentioning before, we can look at where progress is being made and where we need to make our changes. What is implicit in this process is an ongoing and timely quality assurance that allows us, both state administrators and decision makers down to managers and supervisors and workers at the branch level, to look at their practice and make mid-course corrections as they go along in order to support best practice that will lead to better outcomes. So, Oregon is early on in its implementation of family-to-families in its second year. What we've observed from other sites around the nation who have now been implementing the family-to-family reforms for a number of years, we have seen some significant and impressive improvements in outcomes. We've seen increases in the numbers of foster home resource families. We've seen increases in preventative services that are made available to families in need. We've seen increases in terms of permanency outcomes, reunification, and adoption. By the same token, in these other sites across the nation, we've seen decreases in lengths of stay, in the numbers of children who've been removed from their families, and in the use of shelter placement. And as Ramona mentioned earlier, there is a focus in the foundation to shift resources from placements such as congregate care to more family-like settings such as foster family homes. So what is underlying this this shift in these resources that are allocated are the values that the foundation have and that are implicit in family-to-family that add support for resource families, foster homes and foster parents and adoptive parents. And at that point, I would interject that in a time of financially difficult time, such as we're in, it's certainly there is a risk to allow to fall by the wayside support for what are really important members and resources in our child welfare work. And I think that the legacy of that of failing to support them could lead to negative outcomes for children down the line. So that's a background context of national trends in child welfare outcome research. From there, I'd move to what we have accomplished thus far in Oregon over the past couple of years. And I think that Oregon has made significant strides in developing its capability for this self-evaluation process and making that available to inform the other strategy areas that Tony was talking about, the team decision-making and the building of community partnerships and the support of foster parents. So, and among the achievements that we've seen thus far in self-evaluation here in the state are, first off, the creation of a committee in each of the Phase 1 branches, Klamath and Jackson, and East Multnomah branch, and Marion, too, has come on board. And these committees are focused around just exactly the sort of issues that Gary was talking about, getting a hold of the data, getting a hold of data and information and using it to drive our decision-making process. So in the support of these committees that have been formed, Oregon has also done an exceptional job of creating, using the information system that you already had in place to create some infrastructure to extract information from that and get it out to these committees for their use. Office of Information Systems here was able to do was to create a longitudinal data table much along the lines of what is used at Chapin Hall in order to allow us to get information out. And I would add that that there is a dedicated researcher that was hired for the project in central office, a very capable and talented one, who has been able to take information out of this data table and create a number of very useful pieces of information, some quite similar to what Gary was sharing with you before around some work that's been done elsewhere in the nation. So we have committees that have been formed in the branch levels. We've got an analysis table that is now enabling us to start looking at some of our important outcomes that Ramona was talking about before. In addition, we've been able to create geo maps, that is to say, maps that enable us to target much in the way that my colleagues were mentioning before, that enable us to look at geographically where our greatest needs are, where are the regions in our branches where most of the children are coming into care. And over and above that, we are being able to look at the capacity to need ratio for those areas. That is to say, where are our current foster resource families located in comparison with the numbers of children that are coming into care? And that is the type of information that Gary was talking about that will enable us to target, this is where we need to focus our efforts. And our self-evaluation thus far is enabling us to take those first steps to do that. Finally, we've also been able to pull information from the statewide information system that is enabling our researcher at central office to track meetings, team decision-making meetings being one of these core components. We're starting to be able to track if these meetings are occurring prior to the first hearing, which is in the family-to-family model. That is the goal. Within 24 hours of placement, a team decision-making meeting is convened in order that all of the important parties that are important to that decision will be in the same room and will be able to share information and talk with a trained facilitator about what is the best plan for that child within 24 hours. And we're able to use the statewide administrative data system to start looking at how we are doing in terms of having those meetings occur on the front end. And we have recently, through some very hard work, made some changes in the data system to track other team decision making meetings as they occur later in the life of a case. That is to say, team decision-making meetings ideally will occur before any placement move happens or before a child is exited from care. And this, the underlying theory here being that we make the best possible decision prior to an important event in the life of a child. Clearly, there have been a great many successes that we have had in Oregon thus far. There's certainly room for improvement, and the next months are going to be critical. So before I close with some thoughts on some next steps, I just bring up the point again that I made before about these financially difficult times that we're in, and just to underscore that the Annie Casey Foundation, even though it is greatly endowed, is in the same economic situation that we are all in, and their resources are not unlimited. And what with their work nationwide supporting sites all across the nation that encompass well over half of the children in out-of-home care, they are being compelled now to monitor closely how each of those sites are doing in terms of their implementation of the initiative in order that they can determine that they are getting a good return on what they see as an investment. So that being the case, it is critical, I think, for Oregon over these next months to really demonstrate its commitment and its preparedness to fully implement family-to-family, both in terms of all the core strategies, as well as Tony and Ramona have talked about, rolling it out statewide. Those are the kinds of indications that I think will be important for Oregon to position itself in the best possible way to continue to receive financial support from the foundation. And a specific example of this kind of demonstration of commitment is what I understand to be the decision that has been made to make team decision-making meetings statewide policy. That is exactly the kind of demonstration of Oregon's commitment that I think is critical. And over and above that, I think in addition to that, I think it's important that in addition to making the policy, we need to make certain that we have earnest efforts to ensure that those meetings are taking place in the way that is most beneficial for the children. So having said that, other thoughts on next steps would be, as Tony mentioned, the family-to-family initiative is now starting to go across the entire metro region in Portland, and so it will be critical that self-evaluation committee or committees that we set up there move forward quickly and efficiently based on the information that we have learned and what we have gleaned already in our work in other branches around the state.
And that would be proceeding then from East Multnomah County across Multnomah County or...
Yes, Chair.
Or in the Metro Tri-County area? Or
it would be, Tony, you can help me with the specific branch names, but it would be St. John's and Gresham, I believe, and a number of others that would be across the whole metro area.
Senator Fisher, we are looking to expand throughout Multnomah County for the four strategies specifically in that county, and we're expanding statewide with the team decision meetings and the use of this data in the month of May. So every county will begin working on that.
You know, there's been some concern that when you have pilot programs, there are several counties that benefit greatly from the pilot program, and it's kind of shoved down the throat of the rest of the counties without having the benefit of some of the extra funding or the things that went into the pilot program. Are we making some changes to some of those things so that folks have an opportunity to come into these things smoothly rather than just having it kind of forced on them?
Senator Fisher, that has been our goal, and you are correct. That's a history sometimes when you have a pilot and when you go statewide. In addition to the funding that we've received from the Casey Foundation, they have been providing excellent consultation to us. And we have on a regular basis national experts who have come to Oregon. And, for example, for the team decision meetings, we have done a series of statewide trainings for all of our staff who conduct those kinds of meetings on how to do those, and general trainings to our other staff on the value of those meetings. And so we are making an effort to introduce and engage our staff across the state in the value of this. At this point, the reception is very positive. We have a history in our state through your work with the Oregon Family Decision Meeting, and this is just the next step along that road. For the other issues, we hope to employ the same strategies with our work with foster parent recruitment and retention and training. We also have done a series of statewide trainings, and we'll expand on those as well.
How does the grant program that we have relate to the programs that Gary was talking about that were worked in Maine or, say, Georgia? Have we been developing and putting data on and compiling data and things like that so that it gives us a direction, or has it been just basically a work in the field?
Senator Fisher, we have been doing work that's very similar to what Gary described. Our situation is a little different in that Casey came to us. We were not in a crisis when they came to us. And I understand from Gary's description, other states may have had a crisis situation and came to Casey and requested Casey's assistance to come in and do some analysis. In terms of the data, we also have been working not only with the four demonstration sites, but as a companion piece to that, with our Child and Family Services review, data has we have branch data, and we'll be augmenting that data in the month of May with the Annie E. Casey data for every branch as well.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add to that, I think the resource that we were providing through the consulting group using Chapin Hall and those kinds of folks, it's in many ways what we get from Dr. Webster here, who's Casey supported, in much the same way. I mean, Chapin Hall is a much bigger operation, so we're not asking Dr. Webster to do anything Chapin Hall did. But, I mean, in fact, he is doing the data analysis in many similar ways. I think one of the things, though, that's important to know in your question about are we going to jam stuff down people's throats in a pilot project is, it's important to know that the family-to-family project that's very successful now in three places in Oregon has certain principles to it that you really have to subscribe to, and that is, you know, the community, it's important to develop foster care resources in the community. So you have to make a commitment to say we're going to go out and find local foster care resources so we don't have to send children miles away when they have to be removed from the family. It has a principle that says, you know, when children are removed, we're going to provide support to the family in ways that encourage that child to be reunited. I mean, we want reunification, if that's possible, as quickly as possible. And then when a child can't be reunified, then there's principles are that we want a child to remain in the kind of the level of care that I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I forgot to turn this off. The level of care that's appropriate to them, so that they're not placed in high-end care when they don't need to be placed in high-end care. First, that's difficult for children who are mixed in with other kids that have different levels of care, but it's also the most expensive way to do placements. And I have to tell you that the things that happen sometimes in Maine, and I think it's happened in Oregon, is that on Friday night, when a child comes into care, a caseworker has to place that child, sometimes they don't get placed in the right environment. And in Maine, it was kids would be put in therapeutic foster homes. And that's okay for one night, but once a caseworker gets a child placed, you know, there's another one coming down the pipeline, and you worry about the next placement, and it's easy to forget, you know, where you put this child. And I don't know that that's happened in Oregon, but it's happened in other states. And so it's continuing to look and see at the placement and making sure it's the most appropriate. And if it has to be changed, you know, you change it to a more appropriate one as quickly as possible. But so there are, I guess I just didn't, I don't want to mislead you about as these family-to-family projects go up, there are some principles that you want all counties to follow. I don't think they're unbearable or unrealistic principles that you'd want them to follow to make a good family-to-family project.
I guess what I was trying to put together here in my own mind, and not knowing really, you know, in depth about either one of the situations, I was trying to ascertain if basically what we have here with a pilot project is basically a small version of what you did in Maine, and would it be necessary to, if we wanted to go ahead with this, would it be necessary then to see if we could get a project such that for the state something similar to what was in Maine, or would we just look for more help to do what we're doing now to get the rest of our data up, to get a system where we could evaluate ourselves, as what I gathered was what was basically worked out with Maine when you went through and did all the data entries and did all the examination of the data and came up with your recommendations and things. I was under the impression that they were also left with a system basically that they could access and use themselves by inputting their own data in a continuing basis, and more or less it was a self-start and teaching the fish rather than providing the fish.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I mean, what we were trying to do in Maine when we helped them build all their database and then helped them create their monthly management reports was get a system in place that they would run. And we did that. We left them with a system that they would run so that they could keep track of their own outcomes and stuff. We're here in Oregon, we're ahead of where Maine was. I mean, they didn't have some of the most fundamental management tools that we have that address, you know, where their kids were, what kind of care they were, and everything. I think it's safe to say we haven't lost any children in our system yet. I mean, and God help us if we don't. But it's not like Maine, where they couldn't account for 500 children in their system. So we have a much stronger base that we're building on. We have three successful family-to-family programs, and Dr. Webster can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have three successful family-to-family programs, and the notion is how can we expand those programs in other parts of the state, build on them, continue to use the data that we're now using successfully in Medford, Klamath Falls, and parts of Multnomah County to expand family-to-family. And I think that the foundation, through their support of Dr. Webster and this project, is interested in Oregon continuing to move out family-to-family. And after we did all the data analysis and everything, the tool we brought into Maine was family-to-family. We started family-to-family projects in Maine as a way of managing the caseload and stuff. But there was so much work, Mr. Chairman, we had to do in Maine that's pretty well grounded here. And
so basically a program or a model, computer model or whatever it is that you would work out with Maine might also be adaptable to Oregon in the way that it would be instructing toward levels of care and the quickness of getting children reunited with the family and all those kind of things. Is that something that's adaptable state to state, or are our individual rules and regulations so different that it wouldn't, say, work in Oregon if it worked in Maine? Or
Mr. Chairman, so, but pardon me, Dr. Webster is to speak to that. So.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I think that, members of the committee, yes, the Oregon system is very much able to do these kinds of things that you were just mentioning in terms of measuring the lengths of time children are in care based upon a number of different factors such as age and ethnic group and gender and that sort of thing. So, yes, I think Oregon has already taken great strides in putting that in place. We have that information that we have started to now disseminate to these committees at the branch level, as well as we have had periodic meetings at the state level as well with representatives of all those committees so that we can talk about implementation issues statewide. Now that has kind of folded into the same central office researcher that staffs each of those committees is based in central office often, so that kind of process kind of happens almost automatically. But in answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, yes, we do have that capability, and we have started already to produce these outcomes. Each of those nine outcomes that we mentioned earlier, both at the state level and each of the branch levels as well.
Are we seeing any, should I say, better use of our money or our dollars invested going further now in those pilot areas than, say, they would be in other areas?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's as I mentioned before, it's difficult given that Family to Family as an initiative has only been in this state for, well, it's actually up and running for less than 2 years. It is difficult to make those kinds of conclusions in terms of looking at outcomes before and where they are now. I mean, we have had some indication that, yes, our work in the pilot branches is having a positive effect. I can certainly think about some process outcomes such as the numbers of meetings that are occurring prior to placement for children in each of the branches, these team decision-making meetings, to try to make the best decision possible for children. We have seen an increase in their use in the different branches as we have provided to the branches the information to help guide them to see where they were needing some to focus their attention and their efforts. So yes, I would have to say, based on the limited amount of time that Family to Family has been in place, that yeah, we have seen some progress.
Yes, an
important. Oh, I just wanted to say, Tony, some of the discussion earlier and some of the questions, as a former foster parent in a rural county, and then when I moved to the city south of Portland, Lake Oswego, where I was a foster parent as well, I couldn't help but notice the tremendous difference in being a foster parent in a rural area and a foster parent in an urban area. And I really understood and appreciated the difference and the more requirements and the things that I had to meet as a foster parent in a larger area. And I hope as we do these things that I just want to express my concern about that there's so many things that are different in the rural areas, as I'm sure you are well aware. I see this all the time in our Commission on Children and Families, and having had the opportunity to be a director for a short period of time a few years ago, that what is really helpful and good lots of times in the more urban areas and precautions that we need to take are often not applicable in the rural areas, and I'm sure you're very well aware of that. I just, having that experience with foster parenting, I just think it's a tremendous difference that you have in many things like that. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Brown, so I had a further question, you know, about bringing this on into the state. And, of course, I was interested in our talk that initiated this meeting. My thought was that, you know, not knowing that we actually had the grant here already until late in our conversation, and not knowing exactly what direction the grant went until just a couple of days ago, I was thinking primarily with the idea of requesting some help to get a database started and to get the data collected and all that kind of stuff to give us some direction on this. But it would appear that we're already partway down the trail. So what I would ask now is, are we really looking to ask for an expanded or a continued grant to help out getting this across the rest of the state and ultimately accomplish what the end result was in Maine? Or do we need to go back a little bit maybe and have some more help with the database and some things like that?
Mr. Chairman, this may be some place where Ramona would like to weigh in, but, you know, having worked for the foundation and watched in family to family and in many states, I'm a big supporter of, because I've seen what happens in communities when this family to family takes hold, that my hope would be we would encourage the foundation to continue to support our work here in Oregon to broaden family to family throughout Oregon. I mean, that's what I would like to see us push on the foundation to do. But
Senator Fisher, one of the things that it's our goal is we are desiring to change how we do the business in child welfare. And so I appreciated the comments about not making this look like an add-on project, because at its core, what it's supposed to do is workers will think differently as they do child welfare work. Workers will think about the fact when we intervene with a family, because there's an allegation that a child is not safe, we're going to intervene in a way that we're going to try to make that child safe within that family before the immediate thought is we must remove the child, rather than looking at what can we do to help that family keep that child safely in the home. So real turnaround in terms of the thinking of caseworkers. But that's part of the business we're talking about. And when we talk about pulling together that team, that's about folks such as ourselves and what we would expect if we got a call that our grandchildren came into care in foster care. We would all be outraged if we didn't know about it until a month later or 2 weeks later, whatever. And it's really about the good practice of saying, okay, we've got a crisis in a family here, and for this moment this child is not safe. Who can we bring to the table, including the grandparents or the aunts and uncles, other team members that can help us say, here's a plan that we can make work. This is our family. We have ownership in this, and it's not up to the government to simply come in and say, we've got a fix for this. We're going to take this child out of this home immediately. We're not looking to leave children in unsafe environments, but we are looking at a philosophy and a way of kind of redoing how we do child welfare work. We're real pleased with where the state has come. This past year is the first year we've had where we had fewer children come into foster care than we had exit foster care. That's a very good sign, and that's the kind of practice we want to continue to promote. And I believe that the Casey Foundation will be excited about the findings here in Oregon and will want to continue to work with us. One of the things I know about the foundation that Gary may not share with us is they like success. It's kind of like Daniel said, they don't want to invest money in a loser. And so it's up to us to use this data to show how we're going to continue to improve the foster care system, the child welfare system in our state. And I believe that that is the conversation we want to continue having over the next several years.
Is it possible in the short time that you've been at it to begin to see that perhaps the pilot program has been a part or maybe a leader in reducing the amount of intake?
Yes, Senator Fisher, we have, and we can get you some specific data on the three sites that we have been using. Some of the things that I don't have in front of me, but one was, for example, the number of foster families that came forward when they did recruitment in a different way down in Klamath Falls and in Jackson. They found that maybe the ways we had been approaching people to serve families in the community was not the best way. But this is a good example of a private-public partnership, I think, whereby the private sector coming to the table, bringing us technical assistance, bringing us national experts. It's given us the opportunity to see our system through a different set of eyes, really. And there are other examples where we've been able to reduce the number of children needing to come into foster care in Klamath Falls, for example. They had what they were considering almost an out-of-control rate of placement. getting the staff to be able to focus on the concepts we talked about earlier and make sure those services are there for families, I think has been a good thing. So that's the kind of thing. And other counties, as Tony said, other counties can get excited about that kind of success. I mean, all counties want to be successful. And it's, so it's taking the pieces that we see of practice that are working and making those the pieces that we want to take statewide. Not adding new work to do, but saying we will do our work in a different way.
Well, that actually is encouraging because, you know, to see the trend reducing, most of the trends like this that we're looking at increase, and that certainly is something that's exciting to me to see, and just to think that we haven't disturbed any more families than we absolutely have to is something that's gratifying to me as a parent and grandparent. Knowing that I would want to be certainly involved immediately if there was anything I could possibly do if a grandchild or a child had a problem.
Right.
So basically, how can we then as a legislature help you in getting what you need from, say, the Annie Casey Foundation or backing you up in your request for funds? How do we go about this? Do we need legislation? Do we need some letters from a committee? What would you suggest?
I'm so pleased, Senator Fisher, that you wanted to take the time to have us come over and present this, because periodically we go before groups like the E-Board to talk about this is a grant, and you know we get permission to hire under the grant and so forth. But I think just the support from a body like this would be very important to us. I know the Casey Foundation was pleased, I think, that we had this opportunity, because it speaks to the fact that our state, as a state, wants to support this change in practice. Our state is willing to say, yes, this is important. And I don't know logistically if that would look like just a resolution. I don't know that we would need anything in statute. But our system, like every other system, is going to go through some tough times. And just the willingness of you all to be able to say this isn't just another project, and it's not just a project that we can let go of. It's one that we really want to continue seeing change how we do our child welfare practice.
Now, Mr. Chairman, to the members of the committee, to just add to that, I think it could be as maybe as simple as a letter from the committee to Ramona in endorsing the work that's been done through Family to Family and encouraging Ramona to work on a family-centered approach to child welfare that builds on, you know, strengthening resources within the community, working directly with the family and the extended family and the placement process. I think just something as basic as that from you and the committee to Ramona, a sort of an instruction, is reinforcing and maybe not as difficult to get as a resolution or something through. I mean, obviously, some kind of action is even stronger, but I think that kind of a letter from you, Mr. Chairman, and the members of the committee would reflect to the Casey Foundation that this is supported by decision makers, policy makers in the state. And Ramona's right. The foundation does not like to invest in losers. And one of the things that the foundation has, I think, a pretty good feeling about Oregon, partly because the success so far in these three family sites. But earlier, the foundation invested, I think, a good amount in a juvenile delinquency initiative in Portland. They did five sites nationally, if I remember correctly. Portland's was one of the most successful sites in reducing the number of kids incarcerated in Multnomah County. It was a Multnomah County focus, and particularly the number of kids, children of color, you know. And it was a very successful project that the foundation feels really good about, and they should. I mean, it really worked well in Multnomah County. The DA was very, very much a part of it, very supportive of it. And so I think the foundation sees Oregon as a, even though we're in, you know, pretty desperate straits financially, they see Oregon as a ripe place to be really building a good child welfare system.
Jerry, have you been able to hear what's going on?
Yes, I have, Senator Fisher.
Do you have any comments? We'd certainly welcome anything that you might wish to chip in with here.
Well, I would just like to offer the rural community support for not a philosophical investment into families and a philosophical investment in the family-family approach, but also just to personally support philosophies that are offered up the Kinsey Family Family Program.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. It's been kind of a long telephone call there. I hope your ear isn't too sore.
Well, I just appreciate the opportunity to participate, Senator Fisher.
Well, I'm glad that we had our conversation there a week or so ago and were able to get you in on this, because that also helped part of my education in this process. And I think it's a good idea to involved. We're having reports from the pilot project areas, and at least we're getting one group here that has not participated in that involved, and perhaps that'll help lead the way also into helping carry this around the state. But I would be very interested in getting a letter from the committee here and having my committee members sign on with me in support of this, and perhaps even doing a little legwork and seeing if we can't get our House cohorts and counterparts to join us in this process, even though I know our committee times are busy and our days are busy, and so we don't have the House members over here, even though they were invited. But I've talked to them, and they're very interested in this project and the direction that they perceive it's going. So I'm more than happy to do that, and perhaps I could have Ramona work, or your staff work with our committee staff here in drafting a letter and in going forward on this. Any suggestions by any of the members here or you folks of anything that we've left out today or something that we should do? Dr. Webster, do you have any further advice for us here?
Chairman Fisher, no. I'm delighted to hear the committee's support for the information that we presented today and the initiative itself. So taking the action that you're taking seems to me to be an excellent step in the direction that I think the foundation would appreciate.
Well, I know it pleases me, because the fewer cases you have like that means the lesser chances I have of having people come and complain to me and involve me in it. And I can certainly use my time better in other ways. But I did want to make sure that we covered this and discovered how we could best proceed on, because I did get word that probably, even as we're facing some tougher financial times, also folks that have invested in the stock market and some of the foundations and things are having to draw back a bit too. And so I wasn't sure whether we wanted to proceed with some help from them maybe, or whether we would still continue to try to go with the grant. So I'm gathering that your recommendation is that we continue to request their support in grant form and continue the program that we have here, and based on that, that we would arrive at about the same place of what they helped Maine arrive at without perhaps having to go back through all the initial basic work.
Mr. Chairman, I think the strong message from the legislature that the legislative body believes that this is the right approach to dealing with children and families, to work through the community and stuff, will go a long way. And you know what I will encourage Ramona to do, and will try to help her do, is to press on the foundation to continue their support. I mean, they've given $1 million to this effort thus far, which is no small amount of change to put into three counties in Oregon. And I, even though the foundation is like other organizations, you know, their investments aren't producing what they'd like to, they're still going to support programs that they believe are getting good outcomes. And we think we are. And I think we ought to press the foundation to continue its support as we try to broaden family to family out in other parts of the state. That will mean continuing to support Dr. Webster's work, which the foundation does. We'll press them to say we need his work to continue, and the extent that we can get them to renew their financial commitment, we ought to press on that.
Well, another thing about this too, even though we're going through some tough financial times, we may not be able to say save $100 million or something by the next week, but if we get a program base going here that we can look to the future to hold things down and keep them from increasing, we're accomplishing some of the same things. And I'm still interested, even though maybe we don't have all the funds we'd like, I'm still interested in seeing that the funds that we do have actually get out and do as much as absolutely possible. So I'm encouraged by the report and encouraged by your eagerness to continue on with it. I think it's always nice to see excitement evident in a program and some satisfaction with the initial results and things like that. So I thank you very much for your time. And I know that you all are extremely busy, but we appreciate you coming here and putting this on the record, and we will definitely work to get a letter out from this committee and see if we can't also involve the House committee. And in the process, I might even go so far as to see if we can't get our president of the Senate, and I have both of the other leaders here for the caucuses in my committee, so I'll twist their arms to sign, and perhaps we can get the Speaker of the House and Majority Leader over in the House to sign onto this too, and we'll give it every bit of shove we can.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that, because one of the things I think about the principles here is if we have a sense that this is what the legislature wants us to work on and this is the approach we agree to, I think one of the things it does is it starts changing some of the messages. There's a lot of fear about child welfare. There's a lot of fear at a community level that the moment you become known to child welfare, you will lose your children to the system. And this kind of public statement of this is not what we're about, this is not how we want to do business, I think is really critical for the citizens. And I really appreciate y'all's willingness to say these principles are good and this is the direction we should be going in. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I certainly do appreciate it, and we'll get right on it. Our committee is adjourned.
Thank you. Carrie, I'm going to take out the speaker.